Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And so you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? March has never changed anything.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No. Nope.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Listen to me. Rich people think differently. So what I'm going to put in your head today is a rich people concept so you can get to understand it. The only difference between successful people and not is just how they think. Rich people think different. Quit letting people tell you got to get qualified in another program. You don't need another program to be successful. You need to change the way you think. So here's the deal. The problem with becoming a millionaire is that when you decide that you want to be a millionaire, you immediately start thinking, how can I become a millionaire? Well, that thought don't just pop into your head, so you get frustrated and you don't become a millionaire. And you start creating stuff like, well, I guess this wasn't the Lord's will, or as soon as I think of how I'm going to make a million. You can't think of how to make $1 million. Stop. Do you know if you knew how to make $1 million, what's the day, Tuesday? Wouldn't you make it by Friday? Wouldn't you make it by Friday? But suppose I told you how you can become a millionaire with what you have. Because here's the deal. All of you have everything it takes to become rich. You just don't believe it. Now, if you can develop this theory that I'm about to share with you, I have the way for you to be rich. This is it. First of all of you have a gift. God gave it to you when he created you. God never created a single soul without giving them a gift. That's the God that created you. He's a very smart God. Hear the cold thing. When he made you, he put the gift inside of you. He didn't hide it under the ocean. It ain't on the mountain nowhere. It ain't under no rocks. You ain't got to go drilling. God put what you needed inside of you at birth. All of you have a gift. But you have got to do your gift, the thing God gave you at birth to do. It is the thing that you do the absolute best with the least amount of effort. That's your gift. Anything else you doing, you wasting your time. Do you hear me? You wasting your time. If when the alarm clock goes off in the morning and it makes you sick every morning that alarm go off, it's because you ain't doing your gift. You're going against what God created you to be. Do most of you know what your gift is? Who in here doesn't know their gift yet? Okay, let me tell you what you do. Go home today. Don't talk to nobody. Sit down and have one conversation with yourself. What is the thing that I do the absolute best with the least amount of effort? This ain't going to take you long. You old enough, you grown. Write it down. I don't care if it's networking. I don't care if it's babysitting. I don't care if it's doing color. I don't care if it's painting. Whatever it is, it's what you do. Sing it. Whatever you do the best, write it down. That's your gift. That's it. You ain't got to go asking a bunch of people. They've been telling you your whole life. You know, you ever have people call you with their problems? They always call you with your problems because you gifted at it. But you didn't know how to identify it. If you identify your gift. Now, let me ask you this question. This thing that you're gifted at, if you did it for somebody, do you think somebody would pay you $10 for your gift? Just $10. Could you babysit for $10? Could you cut somebody's hair for $10? Could you cut their grass for $10? Could you make them a chicken dinner for $10? Could you do something for $10? Everybody, Don't you have something somebody would give you $10 for? Okay, now, once you have something that somebody's willing to pay you $10 for, this is how this works. It's called the multiples of 10. See, you don't have to figure out how to be a millionaire. You just got to figure out the thing that makes you $10. So now here we go. You do it and you make $10. Soon as they pay you the 10, go do it 10 more times. Whatever it was. Watch some more kids, 10 more times. Get another 10. You got $100. When you get $100, whatever you did to make that $100, listen to me, do it 10 more times. You ain't got to get tricky with it. Just do it 10 more times. You'd have made $1,000. Whatever you did to make the $1,000, don't get smart. Stay stupid now. Do it 10 more times. You have now made $10,000. Hold up. Now we finna grow a little bit, but guess what you got to do to grow? You just got to do some more. Whatever you made $10,000 doing, I need you to do it 10 more times. What you tripping for? If you do it 10 more times, you got $100,000. Now, you might have to hire some people to make this happen. You got to figure that part out. But all you got to do is do what you did for $10. Once you make $100,000, uh-oh, if you just do it 10 more times.
All right, today's podcast is titled Gratitude, Giving Thanks in Advance. And we today will be launching our first, we're going to do a social experiment. Well, it's going to be more than an experiment, but social experiment using the 10 by 10 rule, as Steve Harvey pointed out. Now, I'm going to play this next audio that some of you have heard on here a few times before. And we're going to, this will be our business model, and we're even going to break that down based on Steve Harvey's principles.
Also tonight, the incredible transformation and the Buffalo Strong spirit that made it all happen. 7 Eyewitness News reporter Taylor Epps shows us how a young lady has completed her very own renovation project.
11-year-old Lauren Nelson had big plans for her summer.
I thought it was going to be pretty fun, but with COVID going on, it was going to be not as fun as it could be.
But things changed one day when she was flipping through an American Girl doll magazine at her home in Attica.
And she showed us a $650 VW bus. My husband was like, that's ridiculous. You could buy your own camper for that price.
So she did just that. Lauren saved some money and started looking. A neighbor just down the road had this 20-foot camper that caught her eye.
And then the one day, up popped a for sale sign, and she squealed the whole way home,
and she started negotiating.
It wasn't very hard. He said $500, and I said $400 because that was the money that I had in my bank account, and he said sold.
Then it was time to renovate.
It was a process. We brought home a family of mice. And so there was a lot of deep cleaning,
but that didn't stop her.
I was very motivated because I really wanted a place where I could just, like, hang out like my own house.
The whole renovation process took Lauren about 2 months, and with the help of family and friends, she was able to turn this into this.
It's called Camp Huguet. It means very comfortable and safe. It has its own kitchen and bathroom, so it's like a tiny house.
So now you're the owner of a tiny home at 11 years old.
Yes.
The whole project cost her $800.
She has 3 envelopes that she puts her money in, give, save, and spend. I think she made a really good choice. She now says she's part of the tiny home nation.
She was able to turn her summer around and hopes to inspire others to do the same.
Which is awesome to see that somebody who's 11 years old had her own vision but now is out there and other people are contacting us and they've gone out and bought a camper to do the same thing. If you're looking to have some big plans in the future, you should go out and do it. Make it happen.
In Attica, Taylor Epps, 7 Eyewitness News.
All right. That's going to be... Oh, wait a minute. All right. That'll be our business model. That, and then we have 2 models. That one, the camper. Well, 3. Tents, Let me get my notes out here. Vacant spaces, like backyards or vacant land, acreages, parking spaces, like empty carports, tents, and cabins. All right. And we're going to, this first ad, which we're organizing about 3 today, they'll be up online before nightfall, or at least, yeah, before nightfall today, before dusk. And we'll put them up on our Facebook page. Our Facebook page is It's My House TV. You can look at them there before dusk today. That'll be by 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and then adjust for your local time zone. We're going to go with Steve Harvey, his suggestion of $10. Now, it won't be a flat $10, but it'll be $10 a day. $10 a day. $10 a day you can rent whatever we got that we're putting online today. $10 a day. Now, I haven't decided on, are we going to ask for that $10 a day 30 days in advance, or a week in advance? I haven't figured that part out yet. Robin, if you're available, press 1. But I figured $10 a day, that's a doable number for most people. Maybe in some cases $20 a day, but this first one, because using the 10 by 10 rule, next month our goal is 10. 10 cabins, 10 spaces, whatever. But good morning, Robin.
Good morning.
Well, what do you think? $10 a day for the backyard with or without a tent?
Yeah. And you, okay. I like it.
Yeah, that's a doable number.
Yeah, it's more than doable, and you'll probably have an overrun. You probably won't have enough space at that price.
Well, that's a good problem. We can roll those people over in the next month when we increase what we're going to do up to 10. But, $10, because the sell, all right, like I've told Chair with this, use information offline before. When I've hired day labor from the Salvation, well, one of the Salvation Armies I dealt with, they allow the guys to come in 3 days free, and then after that they would have to be paying, at one place it was $7 a day, at another place it was $15 a day after the three-day period. Now, I'm not a shelter, I'm not set up the Salvation Army or nothing like that, but out the bat, you know, $10 a day and just see what comes back. You know, if you got your own equipment, 10 or whatever, I got a space for you in the backyard, $10 a day. If you got a RV or some type of camper, I got a carport, okay, $10 a day. If you want to be on some acreage, let's see. Oh, if you don't have a tent, okay, but, you know, you're all right with sleeping in a tent in a backyard, okay, well, Robin, what about $20 a day? That includes
that
the tent.
That sounds fair.
Yeah,
that sounds reasonable.
Right. And if you stay for 30 consecutive days, or if you pay up front the whole month in advance, that's $300. Well, hold it. That'll be $600 actually. Then at the end of 30 days, the tent's yours. So whenever you leave, you take the tent with you. So we're gonna roll those three ads out. And matter of fact, tomorrow we'll let you know what kind of numbers we're hitting. So that, like I said, I'll place those ads. They'll be on our Facebook page, It's Miles TV, by 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time today. And then from that, we can tweak on, you know, because we need to increase those numbers for next month. In any event, which is 10, we want to increase by 10, a la Steve Harvey. So, as you noted, Robin, we're working with what we have. The backyard, we got the carport, we got the tent. And we got the acres of land, too. So, well, that's what we got to start off with. Plus this podcast and the internet. Now, Robin, the title of today's podcast is Gratitude, Giving Thanks in Advance. Any comments on the benefit of giving thanks in advance, gratitude in advance?
So the benefits are God says, give and it shall be given unto you. Okay, and so
good measure pressed down and running over.
Yeah, and one of the things I do is I help people as a way of accomplishing that.
So you helping people is your way of expressing gratitude.
Yes, in advance.
Oh, okay.
So I help people.
Before.
I help people. I support them. I give them airtime. I give them money. I give them support services, all in advance.
Well, I can testify to that. That's true.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then I give thanks for the opportunity, not that I'm giving them, but that they're giving me by allowing me to help.
Boy, okay, that's a paradigm shift for me.
Yeah.
That's an absolutely wonderful mindset that you have there.
It's very fruitful. You know, I'm not living large, but I'm living large big enough.
Well, you do your bit of traveling, probably more so than the average person. I mean, just this year you took, was it this year? You took that cross-country trip?
Country, Los Angeles, Dallas, Houston.
Yeah, you went through,
Atlanta.
I know that one trip
went
you went
to Atlanta.
Through.
I went to Atlanta.
Right, cross-country.
One of my most recent trips, yeah.
And that's this year, right?
Correct.
Was it
was just about.
Yeah.
It was almost a little over a year ago, maybe 2 years now.
No, I don't think it was 2 years.
It's close.
I remember
to 2 years.
You took that though. Yeah, but I remember when you took it though, because I remember you were going to Eastern Washington, then what part of Idaho, Montana.
Yep.
Then you. I know you. We're in Chicago. Did you go through D.C.?
Yes.
All right, then on down to Atlanta or wherever. Yeah, it was Atlanta. I mean, Georgia.
Yeah, I switched trains in D.C.
Okay. Hey, now, you carried your equipment with you, too, right?
I sure did.
Okay. Matter of fact, if for those, because I've done my quite a bit of traveling on Amtrak prior to It's My House. One thing I learned is even if you think you might not need it, take some basic medication with you. I'll give you one of my war stories. some years ago, like I said, prior to this, my house years here, I went to, got something at Union Station in Washington, D.C. It was a McDonald's, actually. And, you know, felt normal and got on the train. And we're talking about that's from up there to down here where I'm at. It's because Amtrak, from my experience, overall doesn't run on schedule. Sometimes they catch up, but, you know, over a lot of times they're, you know, late, so that's to be expected. But, you know, the seats are comfortable. The bathrooms are relatively clean and all that. So they serve food on Amtrak. You know, you can buy hamburgers, hot dogs, sandwiches. You can go to the dining cart and order, I guess, a regular traditional meal. But one thing, what happened to me was I got sick. And I was feeling so bad, and I'm just glad it wasn't a whole lot of people in my particular car, that I found a space where, you know, I can stretch out. Because, you know, the seats were like, I think this particular train, three seats on one particular aisle. So, man, I was suffering. But what I did, I had money on me. I went to the, you know, where they're selling the food and all that, and I asked them, did they, I was just looking for some kind of pain relief or NyQuil or something, anything. But they didn't sell any type of medication, over-the-counter medication on there. The guy told me, it, I don't know, something that Amtrak's policy or whatever. So the lesson I learned from that suffering is when you're traveling, not only on Amtrak, but Greyhound, any form of transportation, including if you get a ride with somebody, get you some basic medication, something for pain, headaches, nausea, pack you a little medicine pouch. Alka-Seltzer Cold Plus. You might not need it. And I would say the majority of times that you travel, you won't need it. But what I learned from that trip was it's better to have it and not need it than need it and not have it.
I got one more tidbit to add. Also,
okay.
carry some Vicks VapoRub, okay? So on the plane, you take the Vicks VapoRub and you put some on your shoe, on your wrist, even on your coat, if you will, on your wrist, on the back of your neck, and then on your seat. Put it on your headrest. You know, just a little swipe. Put it on the handrest, because what that will do is that will deter any bed bugs, any pests, spiders, mosquitoes, even snakes and vermin.
I didn't know that.
Bug
bites.
Yeah, so bug bites if you're out and about, or, you know, mosquitoes. So they will deter mosquitoes as well.
Now, let me ask you, like you said, a swipe, because if you're on Amtrak, you know, Vicks has a, you can smell it. It's not a horrible smell or nothing like that.
And that's what makes it worse. So I wouldn't care, because when the people smell it, they're not going to know that you smeared it on the surface or if you smeared it on yourself.
Right. Right. And it's not a horrific smell either, so.
No.
Okay. Well, good tip. Very
good tip.
Now you on that? Now with Amtrak, they allow. Now, I don't recommend people buy stuff on Amtrak.
This is
me. I would recommend, although I have done it, but I would recommend. Robin, what did you do? Because you went across the country, and that's three, four solid days.
What I did was I bought a portable collapsible little teapot that I mm-hmm. could, it's electric, right? It holds
right.
like maybe 2 or 3 cups of water, 4 cups of water.
Mm-hmm.
And it's plastic, so when you get done with it, you just fold it up, and it's like 3 inches thick. So,
okay.
I plugged it into the, put some water in it,
mm-hmm.
and plugged it into the outlet at my seat, and boiled some water, and then I bought cup of noodles and cup of soup.
Okay.
And those styrofoam things, right?
Oh, that's inexpensive. Okay.
Yep, and I packed those and my own, I packed about a case of those and my own beverages and whatever in an overnight case.
All right, that
that's how I ate, because the cup of noodle, you go to buy it on the plane, on the train,
mm-hmm.
it's $4.50 for one cup mm-hmm. of noodle. Ridiculous.
Yeah, that adds up.
And a meal, if you go eat a meal in the dining cart, the cheapest is like $25.
Yeah, they get you. They get you for sure. And it's really not all that good either.
No, it's not.
No, I've had one. One time Amtrak was extremely late. Because when they're late, a lot of times, I mean really late, they'll give you snacks, you know, animal crackers or something like that. So I've had that 2-3 times, maybe 4. And then one time they were like, man, they were, well over 5 or 6 hours late.
Yeah.
And they served us, in the dining cart, a meal. So it wasn't really all, it was a plate. But it really wasn't at all that much on the plate. It was something like, I probably had like something like beef stew or beef stroganoff, something like that.
Yeah.
But it wasn't that much, and it wasn't that good. So I wouldn't want to pay for a meal like that. Like I said, I'd just rather get my own snacks and bring them on with me. Now, were you in a private car or, I mean, were you had your own
no,
little
I
space?
Told.
I rode
coach because watch this. The private cars and the sleeper cars, the private cars actually have more room to maneuver around. The sleeper cars, you can't even maneuver around once you fold the beds out and stuff. And there's no room
now,
for your suitcases barely.
Now, with
right?
the sleeper cars, how is that configured? I mean, is it a private room or is it a bunch of spaces
no,
with
they
beds?
No,
and...
it's private. It's private, and then they give you a section off your thing. You close the thing
mm-hmm.
to make it private.
Okay.
Okay.
Right, I haven't taken one of those as of yet.
But I heard they're not big at all. Once you fold out the bed and everything, then there's not a lot of room to move around. So the other one, they're not sleeper cars, but they're I forget what they are. It's not coach either. Anyway, what I learned is ride coach. And
mm-hmm.
ride the lower level because it's less crowded.
Okay.
It's like riding a bus through the ghetto because you have to walk through rows and rows of people and people. The lower cars, the lower level, you're in a car basically by yourself almost.
Okay, now I've never been on a car like that. On my Amtrak trips.
Uh-huh.
Sounds like you were like on a double-decker type situation.
Yeah.
Okay.
But if you can, ride the lower level because it's easier to get in and off. The stairways are real narrow, you know, farther from the bathrooms, blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Okay. Now, the bathrooms on most of the Amtraks I've been on will have been relatively clean. What about your experience?
I found them to be relatively clean.
Right. And most, yeah, different class of people. Now, like with Greyhound, if I'm on a long trip with Greyhound, which I really don't like to do that, but I will sit in the seat right by the bathroom, because if I have to go, I want to be the very first one to go. Instead of walking past people and there's somebody in there or not. Because some people don't know how to navigate the bathroom on a bus.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they might miss or whatever, and then the bad part is some people on a bus they don't clean up behind themselves.
Yep.
Whereas with a train, you get a different class of people, and they typically are dramatically more cleaner than the bus. I don't know how it is on Megabus. I haven't taken that yet. And then, of course, the cleanest bathrooms I've been in while traveling have been on airplanes. But, boy, are those... Ooh, I got to really navigate those because I'm tall. And plus they don't have a lot of space. But in any event.
Right.
All right, well, like I say, gratitude. I was listening to Steve Harvey this morning. He was on one of Oprah's life mastery classes or whatever. So he was talking about how he loves mornings. And he says the first thing he does upon arising in the morning is he gives thanks that he woke up. And then for 10 minutes, he starts his day off with 10 minutes of giving thanks for what he has already been blessed with. And that sets the tone to his day. So, I did that this morning, and I probably got about 5 minutes. No, three. You know what? I'm gonna say 3 minutes in. And then I got to discipline my mind. All right, let me hone this in for 10 minutes. Because 10 minutes isn't long. So I did at least 3 minutes this morning. So. I'm going to work on getting that up to 10 minutes. I figure if it works for Steve Harvey, it can work for everyone. And on that note, because this is the last day of September, and this has been a Faith Street month for me, probably yours, but I'm going to go through that when we come back, because we're going into October as of tomorrow.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin.
Can we make just one big choir? Now, you know, in choirs, we got to rock. Y'all ready to rock? Let's go.
That's how we work. That's how.
September, man, that I've been on Faith Street this entire month. The entire month. But I'm glad I stayed on Faith Street because, man, it I've had some testimony, so to speak. That's just me. All right. Gratitude, giving thanks in advance. So, and that helped, even if you don't give it in advance, if you start being more appreciative and give thanks or express gratitude when you really need it, you'll be surprised at how things can work out for you in ways that you really couldn't anticipate. I mean, it comes out from different directions. Now, one thing we can give thanks for in advance right now is October. Today is September 30th, the last day of this month of 2021. So we're going to give thanks in advance for this next audio because we want to take a primary nugget out of this one. This is a Nellie Fuller piece. He talks about, well, I'll play it. I played this here before, but I like to take something, the main thing he was talking about this in this piece, and then October, which is tomorrow, get rolling on it.
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we move, and the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that if you, sometimes you're right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you're driving.
That is true.
Down a super highway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build those shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took them out, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know that know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses. They could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them. And there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and big. Because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with them.
All right, the takeaway we're getting out of the Nellie Fuller piece I just played is we want to be building something every day, Monday through Friday, maybe sometimes Monday through Saturday, and occasionally Sunday through Saturday. But at least Monday through Friday, we want to take the nugget, the primary nugget out of what Nellie Fuller was talking about, and build small or tiny structures. Now, to help us do that, and using one of the ideas from Steve Harvey, he's big on vision boards. If you're online, go to our Patreon page. Go to Patreon. Okay, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com. Go to our Patreon page. On Patreon, we're under the creator name of It's My House TV. Go to It's My House TV. Now, all the pictures that you see on there, I took the video that's on there, as you scroll down, about It's My House TV, I took that too. As a matter of fact, I'm the one that's primary one. Well, I'm one of the ones speaking. You'll recognize my voice. So on It's My House TV, which is our Patreon page, and as it's now, like I say, we're using that as one of our vision boards. I've got these pictures and more on my laptop screensaver, on Facebook pages. But right now we're talking about Patreon. So the land that you see, And I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, all right, 5, 6, all right, 1, 2, 5, 6, all right, 6 pictures and 1 video. With the exception of 1 picture, the aerial one, I didn't take that one. But all those pictures are our 4-acre tract, which we call Earth Wealth Energy Village. That's the name of it. So now let's go through the Patreon memberships. And really only 2 are open to people right now. Only 2 are open. The first membership, which is to become an official Patreon of It's My House, it's just $1 per month. $1 per month. And you can join on it, you know, ad-free, you get early access, and then bonus, stuff like that. And it's limited to just 5 people. That's it, just 5 people. Okay, we're not looking for 100 people or 1,000 people, just 5 people. That's people that like what we're doing, and we're going to take your $1 per month and use it to help pay for podcasts here on It's My House. And then anything we might have to do with Patreon as well. But that's just $1 a month. So you can go to Patreon, you can join, and pay your $1 per month. We're thanking you in advance. Matter of fact, I'm giving gratitude. I'm giving thanks in advance that all 5 of those official Patreon memberships are soon gone. All right, we're only taking 5 at this particular point in time. The next membership that you can join, or Patreon is Sean Chip, is the Cash Flow Conversations Patreon level. And that's just $5 per month. And then with the Cash Flow Conversations, we get into actual conversations where, okay, this is an idea that we've come up with. It could be like a Laura Nelson idea. It could be like a Lamar Alexander with the solar cabin idea. It could be a 9 friend. We come up with an idea, and then we act on it. All right, but that's for $5 a month. We do a lot of brainstorming and planning. So that's $5 a month for the Cash Flow Conversations that you can be in on yourself. We're only taking 3 of those at this time. Later on, we might open it up, but right now, just 3. And I figure, actually, Robin and I figure, that anything past 3 can be kind of dicey. So probably 2's the best number, but, you know, 2-3 tops. So right now, it's that'll be limited to just the 3 people. That's $5 a month, and that's for people that want to advance on. Now, there are 2 other categories here. Solar Home Manufacturing School Patreon tier, that's $350 a month. That's what we're actually doing building. That's what we're actually doing, what Laura Nelson did at 11 years old, you know, renovation of campers or building solar cabins or building off-grid cabins that run off of renewable energy, hands-on stuff, stuff that after we build it, okay, we're not buying it, we're building it, then, you know, we're marketing it through some social media platform and that's, and the whole idea of that is you put up your $350, but you get it back after what we've built. The $350 is used for building materials and or tools as needed. After we build it, we're immediately going to put it up for market, you know, on the market to sell. And the idea is to make enough profit where you'll get your $350 back plus a profit. Well, once again, this is hands-on. That's, and right now, that's not available. And the e-Village Patreon e-commerce village patron level, which is, that's $1,000 per month. Okay. You've got to do at least 3 transactions through the Solar Home Manufacturing School to even qualify for the highest level, which is the e-village patron level. And there's an aerial shot of Earth Wealth Energy Village. That's our 4-acre track. All right. That's $1,000 a month. And what that does is we get another tract of land, at least 1 or 2 acres minimum, and build buildings, structures to place on these acres of, you know, tract of lands as we get them. But that's not available for people right now, or the Solar Home Manufacturing School is not available right now. You got to come in at the $5 level, cash flow conversations. So right now, the only two available are the $1 tier and the $5 tier. But the whole aim is to move you up to the $350, where you're actually getting hands-on experience, and then actually help building a village, an e-village. What is the e-village? It stands for e-commerce village. You know, where you're off the grid or semi-off the grid. And, I mean, look at the place. Like I say, it's an aerial view. And then if you look at the pictures, you know, I took all those pictures. That gives you an inside look of what the interior. And I named it Earth Wealth because it's surrounded by Earth Wealth. I mean, it's above ground, it's on the ground, it's below the ground. It's quite a bit of Earth Wealth there, and that can be converted into whatever type of monetary tool that you want it to convert into. So, once again, $1 a month, only 5 available at this time, and only 3 available for the Cash Flow Conversations patronship, which, and we chop it up on air at least 5 times a week. At least 5 times. All with the goal of taking action. All right, so, hey, you know, what you spend on potato chips on a monthly basis is anywhere from $1 to $5. So, anyway, that's that on that. And although it's September 30th, we're giving thanks in advance that we're able to do at least 10 Laura Nelson or Lamar Alexander solo cabin projects next month. Now, we already got land to start it off. Okay. So, but we're giving thanks in advance now that we're successful in doing 10 completed transactions for October 2021. Robin, any thoughts, comments, suggestions, whatever?
No, I think you about covered everything.
Yeah. Oh, and I'm throwing in Nellie Fuller too. That's why I played the Nellie Fuller thing, and I'm gonna play that again because it's real basic.
Because I used to observe that a lot of little shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we move, and the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do. And,
but we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that if you, sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see the trains passing
that
as you're driving.
That is true.
Down the superhighway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build those shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took them out, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know that know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done.
Hmm.
I, coming along, I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses. They could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them, and there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and big, because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with them.
All right, so we're taking, now out of that audio, like I say, we'll be offering classes and retreats on building, and so we're taking a little bit. Laura Nelson, all right, she's 11 or 12 years old now. So we're taking something out of that. You know, campers, we know how to find those. If we can't find a camper, then we're going to build. From Lamar Alexander, a solar, as he calls it, a solar cabin. What Neely Fuller was talking about, and a lot of people do this now, is they salvage doors, windows, various building parts, which helps. We'll be doing some of that too. I guess the biggest challenge, though, and Robin, you can chime in on this, is now I'm not worried about the. Well, let me ask you this: what urbanites? People that love to be in a city, an urban setting. Because most of these places, at least that I'm dealing with, and I'm modeling part of what I do on what the Amish do. The Amish, except for one community that's, I think, here in Southwest Florida, most 90%. I'd say well over 95%, if not 98, probably 90. I'm going to say 99%. 99% of Amish communities, because we take a lot from them, are in rural neighborhoods. Not neighborhoods, rural rural locations. Robin, what's your take on the typical urbanite that's struggling on the grid in well, let's go with Jacksonville, Florida, or Orlando, Florida, or Tallahassee. What do you think, or Valdosta, Georgia? What do you think it'll take for them to even consider living in a rural location?
Probably a disaster or an emergency.
In other words, somebody whose ass out.
Somebody, so they last resort type situation, because people they go, wow, I don't want to go way out there. It's blah blah blah. There's nothing out there. But at the same time, watch this. People get in their cars and they travel 30 minutes, 40 minutes, an hour, wherever they're going. Okay, and so.
Right.
So rural might be 30 minutes, an hour away, but so is across town.
True.
Okay? And so for the people that you appeal to their, if you don't appeal to their creature comforts, then you appeal to their needs. And one thing, we're resolving a problem. Okay, we're not going into real estate, so we don't have to worry about attracting customers, right? We're resolving a problem. We're teaching people how to build, and we're teaching people how to build to live, I'm saying. So we don't have to get clients and customers, if you will. We don't have to worry about attracting them, if you will, because we're providing a solution. And so they're automatically going to come. We've created our own demand, if you will.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, you know, the what we're doing, the locations that let's see, and I got an audio here that addresses that, because most people who live in a city environment, they are, or some are, not all, addicted to the comfort and conveniences of urban life. Here, you know what, let me play this audio. I think this is one of the target markets that we'll probably be servicing.
Imagine living in a space that measures a mere 168 square feet, more than 14 times smaller than the average American home. Well, it is here inside this tiny house where the proud owners are discovering that less is so much more.
Well, in the past year, we've managed to save everything that I earn. We use my husband's income for our living expenses, and I've been teaching public school, so that's about $3,000 a month that we've put in the bank this year.
Hari, her husband Carl, and their two young kids, Archer and Ella, recently celebrated their one-year anniversary in their tiny house. After losing their 1,500-square-foot home to financial struggles, the couple took matters into their own hands, literally. They built this space themselves with just $13,000 in materials. Their goal? To become debt-free and save enough to one day build a new home, mortgage-free. And so far, they're right on track.
Things are going really well with the next project. We're going to build a 16 by 24 unit to begin with, and then we'll branch off of that and add bedrooms.
You may remember seeing this family on The Anderson Show earlier this year, where I joined them on stage. Fascinated by their story, our financially fit team flew down to Virginia to see for ourselves and learn ways we can all downsize.
How are you?
Hey,
really good.
You. Hey there.
Living in the tiny house has taught me that we don't need much at all to be happy, and that getting the things that we need can actually be a lot of fun.
Can you get me a bowl and some scissors?
The family's fruit and vegetable garden lets them eat healthier, cut down on their carbon footprint, and slash their grocery bill by as much as 30%. Hari has also been upcycling, as she calls it, taking something old and breathing new life into it.
My favorite upcycling project was the rugs I made for the house. I took old sheets, flat sheets, and crocheted them into rugs. They're beautiful, and they fit the house a lot nicer than if we had gone and bought something new from the store.
The couple also recently switched jobs, not for more money, but more happiness. Carl is enjoying better working conditions at a new restaurant, and Hari left teaching to pursue a career in nonprofit. Being able to afford a career that you love and pursuing a passion rather than a paycheck, they've learned, is just an added benefit to having savings and no debt.
I'm probably taking a 25 to 30% cut in my salary, which is going to enable me to have more time to actually build the house and save money because I'll be the contractor.
It's really a great feeling to be able to make a decision like that, not based on money, but based on what we want to be doing with our time.
The kids also seem keen to the transition. Mom and Dad are happy to report fewer requests for video games or toys now that Ella and Archer are busy playing outdoors on their 3-acre property.
We play down by the creek and up at the big tree up there where the swing is. We play with our neighbors and ride bikes.
There's a lot of different things they can do with their time besides play with plastic toys and get online.
They've really just embraced it wholeheartedly. You can't stop them from having a good time outside.
Still another lesson, when you downsize, it helps to have a support system.
There's such a wealth of knowledge in our community, and that helps us a lot. And having that support makes it like we're doing it together. Moving to the country has given us a lot of things, not just the tiny house.
So, what do you think? What are your thoughts about living in a tiny house? Would you ever do it? Connect with me on Twitter at Farnoosh and use the hashtag FinFit for Yahoo Finance. I'm Farnoosh Tarabi.
And I think one of the niche demographics that we'll be dealing with are people just like this. They people that were forced to downsize. And, you know, that's a couple. Matter of fact, if you're online, they have a website, tinyhousefamily.com. Go to tinyhousefamily.com and see. They got a book out. And the metric that I really look at for success in this, if the wife is happy, you know, what's that expression? If mom is happy, everybody's happy, or happy wife, happy life. You see a picture that 160 square foot, 168 square foot tiny house that they built themselves, let's see, they got courses and coaching. So now they're teaching others how to do it, looking for a new start, need direction, support, accountability, take charge of your life, create a pathway to a mortgage freedom, okay? So that's probably, let me open up Robin's mic. That's probably some of the people that we'll probably be helping, people that are reentering society, through a shelter type situation or out of prison, or like probably a lot of them downsizing, particularly from this pandemic. We don't know how everything's going to work out. You can subscribe to their email list. They do consulting. How much do they have their prices on here for consulting? All right, they offer design consulting. So they got a family business out of this, and they also do speaking. Okay, they speak on downsizing, abandoning the consumer culture, homesteading, mindful money, parenting and family life in a tiny house, cooking tiny, food preservation, kitchen management, repurposing, building design. Like I said, this is all on their website, tinyhousefamily.com. Let's see. And you can also, now they probably have a bigger structure by now, but tour our home and they've got videos. And they had two videos on there and whatnot. Robin, what's your take? I figure some of the people that will be helping will be just like this family. That, you know, they were forced to downsize. So I imagine the people, because they ended up going from urban environment to buying 3 acres. So they bought 3 acres of land. They built that debt-free home for them and their two children. You know, they were living for under 200 square feet. Some people have closets that are bigger than that. But,
yep.
You know what? They, talking about gratitude, they were grateful. And later on, they built from there. So, anyway, your take on the type of people that will probably be coming to us for some type of assistance.
Well, you're going to have people coming to you for solution, resolution, not so much of assistance, if you will, even though you are providing them assistance, okay? So
right.
We're teaching people how to build, to live. And so that's going to bring a different type of people from all types of backgrounds and stuff like that, economic levels and all that too. So because what you're giving is people an opportunity to build and own where they wouldn't one, because, you know, no credit, trying to go get a loan, blah blah blah, it's not going to happen. They don't even have a job. So what you're doing is you're coming with a whole different class of people. You're going to be reaching everybody, because everybody needs housing solutions, from the rich to the whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And
so,
they have a book called Coming Home: Letters from a Tiny House, and it is available on Amazon. And if you're a member of Prime, which I am, you can read it for free. So this will be part of my reading today. I can probably knock something like this out today, but or definitely by the end of the weekend. But the weekend doesn't start until tomorrow. Let me read the introduction to this. And this is from Hari, the wife. What an amazing 2012 was. From the darkness and the depression I experienced in January to flying to New York City to share our tiny house with a national TV audience in April, to a summer full of planting, harvesting, and canning, to a glorious fall of leap of faith, and a leap of faith, they were on Faith Street too, to a winter of more darkness and a big test. Even though so much changed in 2012, one thing consistent was every Sunday. I sat down to reflect on my week, synthesize my experience into some sort of lesson, and then sent it out to my subscribers. Let me see. There were parts of my story that I want to disown, but through this process of writing and reflecting, I've learned that shining light on the darkness is empowering, and it helps others shine light on their own dark parts. Through my letters, I expose my own vulnerabilities, fears, desires, and dreams. I don't pretend to have the answers, although reading my letters may lead to your own answers. Life in a tiny house is still life full of mundane activities like washing the dishes, doing the laundry, scrubbing the toilet, cooking, eating, entertaining, caring for kids, and sleeping. It's true there's an outward requirement to fitting in a tiny house. Downsize your belongings to only what is most necessary. That's clear at the onset. We all know how to get rid of stuff. Most likely, you've been doing that your whole adult life. What wasn't clear at the onset was the internal requirement to fitting into a tiny house, the mechanics of emotion, self-acceptance, and communication with something that I didn't fully anticipate. Our family has gained much from our time in the tiny house, namely the deep connection to ourselves and each other. We're a stubborn bunch. There are loud moments when we're neither listening nor reflecting or respecting each other. There have been awful moments when we didn't think that we could take another minute of living in such close quarters. Remember, they were like in 160 or 168 square feet, four people. But those moments served to propel us into a study of nonviolent communication and mindfulness practice. Archer, that's her son, said it's best after closing his eyes and listening to the chime while breathing deep, I feel a lot of space. There's an infinite space available to us if we know how to turn within to find home. Present my weekly letters as a study of one family's journey to understand our basic needs, how we stripped away everything and found joy. My letters tell another story of how I continued to listen to my heart, going from one job to another, to finally taking a leap to a full-time writer. I'm grateful to the readers of my blog, tinyhousefamily.com. I'm in awe of its growth and humbled by the opportunity to inspire others through sharing our story. It's grown into a very special community. I'm incredibly thankful to my subscribers, faith in my journey, for their vote of confidence in sticking with me each month. This letter has given me accountability and a regular writing practice. I'm thankful to my husband, Carl, for saying, "Just do it, honey. You've been talking about it forever." He works hard to support us. Now, this dude, her husband, and she mentions it briefly in audio I played. She's able to do in 2021 what a lot of husbands, I would say the majority of husbands, can't do in 2021, but they used to do in the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and maybe a little bit of the 60s. That when they downsized, he was able to support his family, himself, his wife, and mind you, I'm going by the metric of the wife's happy meter. It's a happy woman. And two kids off of one paycheck. Dagwood Bumstead did it with household with Blondie and Dagwood. You know, Ozzy did it. Ricky Ricardo did it. Fred Flint. But in 2021, particularly in Western countries, most husbands cannot support the family off of one paycheck. Carl, her husband, has been able to do that. And a big part of that is, and you think about it, because tiny houses essentially cut out 70 to 80% of the fat out of your house. In other words, parts of your house that you're not even living in cuts down on your electric bill, your heating bill, water. They built the house for $13,000 cash, you know, by going on Craigslist and online looking for stuff, and watching YouTube videos. So they did that, and a lot of people are doing that globally. Most people won't do it globally, but there's a lot of people that are doing it globally. So they're not paying rent, and they're not paying a mortgage. They totally opt out of that whole thing. All right. So they 'cause essentially, and this is my point of view on it, most people that had to get a 30-year mortgage are broke. They don't have, and when I mean broke, I mean they don't have the available ready cash to build a house. Even if you get somebody else to build it, they don't have the ready cash to do that. But these people, well, they had, what, a 1,500-square-foot house. They were forced to downsize. They were forced how to, you know, they didn't go into a credit. Maybe they didn't have a credit. You know, their credit score was probably in the crapper, and that's why they probably had to downsize due to foreclosure or something like that. I don't know that part of their backstory. So it came down to, well, as Robin says, work with what you got. What they had to work with was YouTube. And they watched those videos. And he taught himself, him and his wife, they taught themselves how to build. Any question that they had to ask, did something that they didn't know, they went to social media, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, whatever, and then asked questions. Through it all, they didn't have to get a mortgage. In any event, I'm a member of Amazon Prime, so the book is titled, and it's by Hari, H-A-R-I, Kaur, that's K-A-U-R, or Berzins, B-E-R-G-I-N-S. The title of the book is Coming Home, Letters Up from a Tiny House. I can read it for free. So I'm going to go ahead on my Kindle, and that'll be part of my motivational reading for myself. I don't know if I'll knock it out today, but I know I'll knock it out by Sunday night. You know what? But October's coming up, so I might have a goal to read. Instead of me binging on Netflix tonight, this is going to be my reading night. I'll binge on this book. But in any event, Robin, any comments before we go to somebody else?
No, I'm good.
Okay. Hilltop on tonight?
Thursday?
Mm-hmm.
Is today Thursday?
Yeah, today's Thursday.
Yes, it is.
The last
yes.
day of September.
Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, even for people who don't want to build one of these and live in it, I'm throwing out a suggestion. If you're looking to earn some passive income, and there's a whole bunch of different ways that you can earn passive income, but the one way I'm suggesting is still build one or two or three of these. You don't have to live in it. But I got a feeling things are going to be opening up for 2022. Because basically, globally, most people, not all people, are getting vaccinated. And, you know, you'll be able to travel. I mean, I believe some countries, more and more countries are going to open up. And, you know, if you're vaccinated, and I guess you carry around your card or whatever, things will be getting back to normal, or the new normal will allow us to move around, you know, more like we've done before without masks and whatever. So we're coming into October as of tomorrow, but I don't think things are going to get really back to normal until sometime, like the first quarter of 2022, because although tomorrow's October 1st, when we get to the 31st, that's Halloween. And when we get to Halloween, basically people are in holiday mode. You know, people are going to start having holiday parties and all that. Things, the fourth quarter starts tomorrow. We'll have, you know, the 1st to the, 30th, 29th to 30th. Then once Halloween weekend hits, it's holiday mode. So in anticipation, because you're going to have a whole lot of people that are going to be looking for places to stay because all moratoriums will be up. So a lot are up already. The courts will be probably be back in full swing action first quarter of 2022. So I'm saying even if you're not going to build one of these to live in it, because it's not for everybody. It's definitely not for everybody, okay? But it could serve as a nice form of passive income. But once again, you know, do your research. On it. And what YouTube, it's never ending information on tiny houses or alternative. You got people that live in cars, people that have converted school buses, just never ending. Actually, I'm kind of surprised that with all this information online, that there's so much information online that you can probably end homelessness. I mean, information is there. Let's see. Okay. All right. We're going to go to another call, but wait a minute. I'm trying to get my board straight here. Okay. Wait a minute. Let me try it again. Let's see. All right. So while we're waiting for the board to come around, like I said, we're giving thanks for a very successful October 2021 and a very better than terrific fourth quarter of 2021. Are we going to do this last business model, which some of you have heard a gazillion times, and then we're going to go to the next call?
Hi, folks. In this video, I'd like to talk about how to have a home with no house payments and no monthly utility bills. You may think that's not possible, but I do it, and lots of other people do it as well. I'm going to show you how it can be done, how it can be done very inexpensively, and just kind of give you some ideas for things that you can do that society and the economic powers that be don't want you to know. So stay with me for a second, and let me walk you through this. First, you need some land. This is my piece of land, which is under an acre, about 3/4 of an acre. And that's really all you need to take care of most of the needs you have and for running a small homestead. Now, I was lucky enough to get this piece of property from family. It was willed to me when my father passed away. But I have also purchased small pieces of property like this for under $400. I have an acre down in Arizona near Sholo, Arizona that I purchased for under $400. I have 5 acres near El Paso, Texas that I purchased for under $700. So it's very easy to find a piece of land if you do some looking around. eBay is a good source for finding land. Tax sales are a good source for finding land. Family members may want to sell off a piece of land. Go around looking in rural areas, and maybe you'll find a farmer that wants to split off a small piece of land and would gladly sell you one. You don't have to spend a lot of money on land, okay? This is land that doesn't have utilities run to it. It doesn't have a blacktop road that runs into it or driveway. It's rough land. That's what you start with usually if you want to buy a small piece of land that you're going to homestead on. After you have your piece of land, then you're going to have a house. You can have a big house like most people live in, and you can pay a lot of money for it and have a mortgage and be a slave to the system for another 30 years, or you can decide if you'd like to build a smaller house like mine. Paid for with cash. This is my solar cabin. The cabin cost me $2,000 to build. That does not include the doors and windows, which I salvaged off of a trailer that was being torn down. For the cabin, it cost me $2,000. It is 14 by 14. Downstairs is living area, dining area, bathroom, kitchen. Upstairs, I have a loft, bedroom, and an office. In my other videos, I take you on a complete walkthrough of this cabin, so watch those if you want to see how the cabin is as large as it is and functional on the inside. Up there on my roof, you see my solar panels. That's a 350-watt solar system that provides all of my electricity needs for lights, TVs, water pumps, all miscellaneous gadget, laptop, TV, run my vacuum, and everything else off of a 350-watt system. That 350-watt system cost me under $3,000. $2,000 for the cabin, $3,000 for the power system of solar electricity, and I use propane. I have a propane tank in the back of the cabin, and I have a propane furnace, fridge, stove, and on-demand water heater, and those cost me just about $200 for an entire year. And we have cold winters here, folks. Under $200 for an entire year for all of my propane. That is the only utility bill I have. I do not pay for electricity. I do not pay for water because I drilled my own water well. Before I drilled my own water well, though, I hauled water in. But drilling a water well on a piece of property is not that hard. You can either do it yourself or hire somebody to do it. So I have no monthly utility bills. I have a house that's completely paid for. And I have freedom. A freedom that you can't get when you're under the pressure of a mortgage and utility bills. I want you to take just a minute and think about what you could do with your life if you had no house payments and no utility bills. And I'm telling you, it is completely possible. I'm not going to go into any details of how to get out of the house that you're in. You're going to have to figure that out and talk to some professionals for some help that way. All I'm here to do is tell you it's completely possible. Now, some of you are looking at the cabin and saying, yeah, but I couldn't possibly live in anything that small. This cabin was designed specifically for additions to be built on any of three sides. As you can see, the cabin has no windows on any of the three sides. There is a window in the back door glass. The sides are 14 by 14. The cabin was built to have shed additions built on all three sides. This cabin is 400 square feet approximately inside with 200 square foot footprint. When you add on additions, you could add on an additional 400 square feet on either side and off the back, giving you anywhere from 800 to 1,200 square feet. The great thing about building a small cabin to start out with, though, is it gives you a place to live when you build on your additions, and that way you can wait and live very cheaply without any house payments or utility bills, and then when you have the money, you can build on the additions to expand the cabin. That's very good for a single person or a young couple who don't have children because you don't need a whole lot of space to start off with. This way you can save for it, build on as you want to, have the additions, have the extra room if that's what you want. Now, I live full-time in this cabin. I live by myself, but my girlfriend comes up here on the weekends, and we stay together, and let me tell you, it's perfectly comfortable. We don't feel cramped at all, and we'd much rather have a small place like this. It takes a lot less money to heat, takes a lot less money to cool, it's a lot easier to clean, it's just a fantastic home. Now, I'm not trying to push you into building a home exactly like mine. I'm just trying to provide you with some ideas. If you wanted to come up with different ideas, a different plan, that's just fine by me. But if you are interested in learning how to build a home like mine, I do have an ebook available and a printed book available called Simple Solar Homesteading. Go to www.simplesolarhomesteading.com. You can learn how to build a cabin like mine, or at least get some great ideas for building your own home. Now I want to repeat, I own my land. I have a house that I built for under $2,000. I have a solar electric system that I have for under $3,000. I use propane, which costs me under $200 a year. I have no house payments. I have no utility bills. If you want a life like this, it is very possible. You can stop listening to the media, and you can stop being put under society's pressures to live in the type of houses that everyone tells you you have to live in. You can live very inexpensively, and you can do this at any age, whether you're older or younger. If you're younger and you start in a place like this, imagine the amount of money that you would have to retire on, with no house payments, no utility bills, and freedom. Thank you for joining me, folks. Please watch the rest of my videos for more detailed information on each of the systems and a complete walkthrough of the cabin.
Okay, and that's part of now part of our Patreon thing. And like I say, we have four tiers. Only two are available to the public right now. One for $1 a month, which just, you know, you give support and that dollar will go towards this podcast. The $5 a month, we brainstorm and give some hands-on information. And then in tiers three and four, we get into the land buying and you know, house building. But, Robin, Robin, you there?
I'm here.
What have you learned in the this month, this September, on I showed you something that I'm involved with, where how much this really doesn't, you know, let's not name the county. Let's not name the counties. But in one of the counties, how much was it per acre, if you remember? Don't name the county, just how much per acre.
I don't remember. I'm sorry. How much what?
How much did I pay per acre on the 10-acre tract?
$200 per acre?
Yeah, that's right. I paid $200 per acre. So Robin,
yeah.
Now Robin knows more about what's happening in that particular county than I do. So in the $5 Patreon tier, because those are only two we have open, the $1 tier, which is open to five people. And then in the cash flow conversations tier, which is just $5 a month, that's the Robin and I having conversations, and Robin knows where to go find, you know, land for $200 an acre now.
Yeah.
Any other observations that you learned by, and she did this research on her own. I gave her some basic information on what I've done.
Yeah. You know,
she's taking it further than that, though.
Yes, when I was researching the land, I researched all of the facts about the city, the population, the income, the jobs, you know, everything. What was the number one job? What was the number one accommodations there, you know, like that. I studied and I learned a lot about the area, even though it's out there in the middle of nowhere. It because someone took the time to invest their personal money and build an art center, now some 30, 40, almost 50 years later, it's still a big art mecca.
Right.
So I learned that you can look at the surrounding area, and you can glean, if you will, from the natural environment and create a whole livelihood just off of the natural element of the land. Okay?
Right.
Yeah, so it's pretty amazing. And then I also realized how you can section off the land and gain income off of it. I also learned ways of generating income off of your property when you can't necessarily rent it, or when it can't be occupied with renters.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I even learned that you can take vacant land and lease the space. You don't have to put a building or a structure on it at all. Just lease the
right.
space, because people need places to park their
right.
RVs or, you know, vehicles.
Oh,
you
know you what?
Know.
Speaking of parking spaces,
I
sent you and some other people early this morning. There was a dude, let me go. I think I put it on our Facebook page, It's My House TV. Let me go there and see if I posted it on there. There was a guy that was sleeping in his car. And got killed by the police.
Oh, yeah.
Let me see if I post it on It's My House TV Facebook page. Because I'm looking at one of the services that we can offer through membership is, you know, we got private land. So it'll be a safe haven to park your car. Nobody's going to bother you because it's on private land. Let me see if I... I sent it to you by instant messenger.
Yeah, I saw it. I'm having a really hard time with people getting shot, sitting in their cars, sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
This dude was sleeping in his car.
Yeah, he was in his car sleeping, but I guess it was on a public street.
If he was sleeping, he wasn't moving. So what the hell was he doing that was dangerous? That cop could have considered.
I agree with you. I'm just saying.
He was afraid for his life. That's ridiculous.
Right. Hold on, wait a minute.
Wow.
What in the hell? I just got worried. But anyway, I guess we're going to add that on there. Safe havens of where you can sleep. Let's see.
Yep.
I sent that out to 4 or 5. I thought I posted. Yeah, no, that might have it on my Facebook page. I don't have it on the It's My House Facebook page.
No, I remember when I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
They had this thing called Helping Hands,
right.
And you could put a little white Helping Hand in your window.
Right.
And then people in the community knew that was a safe place to. So we used to get runaways. You know, people used to come to my mom for help, helping hands.
All right. Oh, I found it. I have it on my Facebook page. On August 25th,
yeah.
Jordan White started live recording a strange scene in Washington, D.C., ambulances and police cars encircling a man sleeping in his car. Suddenly, police opened fire, dozens of shots rang out, 10 of them hitting the man who was killed. Police have been called because the man in the car, Gil was blocking traffic. Officers noticed that he had a gun in his waistband. He tried to wake him up, but when the car moved, they immediately shot and killed him without them even seeing him touch his gun. And that's against their own policy.
Yep.
Well, you know what? As I was telling you, Rob, the other day, that's one of the policies. No guns.
Yeah.
Now, me personally, I've never felt the need to carry. That's just me, though. But, you know, not everybody's alike. But, you know what? That's a whole art and science of itself, finding a place to park. Let's go. Let's take one call here. 314. Your mic is open.
L.A., what do you mean, no guns?
I said for me. Me personally, I've never felt the need to carry one. That's just me personally.
You must stay in the house all the time.
No, I used to go looking for houses in bad neighborhoods, boarded up and everything. Hardcore ghetto. Never felt any need to, you know, I would announce, somebody's coming in. That's about it with me.
Yeah, okay, well, that must have been back a long time ago, way back when.
I've been cussed out and threatened but I don't know what they were carrying, but I just never felt it. Now, my mother from another generation, she felt the need to have a gun in the house, but I've never felt that. I had an uncle, you know, he never used a gun, but, you know, sometimes he would say, I just feel like carrying my gun today. But he had a whole different – my life experiences were different from theirs. So I'm just saying. And in today's world, I don't play in the drama because some people have gotten killed by just, you know, somebody said something to them and they got into a shoving match and one person shoves the other one and the person that got shoved pulls out a gun. So
– you know, funny thing you talk about, I'm just completing the purchase of a – pistol for my daughter off of gunbroker.com. And this dealer is down there in Florida. And I got to check out so that they can provide them information so they can send it
right
to where she is.
I'm assuming you've trained her in firearms.
Yeah, she knows that one of your cousins took a gun out of her purse.
Okay.
Can't have Jack no more.
Yeah, because I think, like when my mother had a gun, she never used it. But the turnoff about me, even her buying a gun was, all right, you got a gun, but number one, you don't know how to use it. Number two, you don't know how to clean it. And number three, you don't have it in a safe place. But fortunately,
well,
never happened.
She had to learn those.
Yeah, well, I'm all for that. If you're going to, I believe, and I don't know the gun laws, but my whole thing is I think people need to take maybe a mandatory class in gun safety and how to use the gun properly, how to shoot it, how to clean it, and safety.
Well, I agree with that. Matter of fact,
it should be common sense, but you know, sometimes we hear about these kids. Matter of fact, I think I told Robin about it a day or so ago. This kid, he killed his mother. Shot her. I don't know the backstory on it, but
you got everything with kids. You got kids have sex with their mama, so everything it runs the whole gamut.
Oh, good Lord, you.
That's true. You
got
kids. You got
true,
you got teenagers having sex with their mama.
Yeah, that's some craziness there. Yeah.
It runs the gamut. So ain't nothing.
Yeah, that's true.
Nothing new
under the sun.
Yeah, you got women, mamas that provide her daughters. In this case.
Hmm. The world, well, it's nothing new. It's been going on for forever. Yeah, but with gun safety, yeah, I don't have no problem with people owning guns as long as you know, like I say, how to properly use it, you know, how to keep it out of the reach of others, and, you know, gun safety including cleaning, because I've heard of stories of people, they clean their gun and then the gun misfires and they're dead. So that should be common sense, but, you know. Oh, man, Bianchi dropped off. Well, on that note, that's it for today. Remember, people, gratitude. Give thanks in advance. So we're giving thanks in advance that October 2021 will be in the whole fourth quarter of 2021 for us will be monetarily prosperous and financially rewarding. On that note, everyone have a good rest of the day.